Hey, hey, everybody. It's Optimus with the Retro Futurist Culture. Today, we have a very special guest. We have Robert Woodhead, the founder of Animego, bringing anime to the West for many, many years. He's going to be on here. We're talking about his Macross 2 project and other projects that Animego may be involved with. I am so stoked to have him here. Robert, how are you doing today?
Oh, fine, thank you.
Great. Anybody that doesn't know, Animego recently launched a very successful Kickstarter for Macross 2. Macross 2 is a 6-episode OVA in the Macross franchise. It was produced by Big West without the involvement of Studio New or Tatsunoko Productions in 1992. They had kind of decided they were done with Macross after their initial batch of TV series, animated movie, and OVA. They kind of took a break, but Big West still owned the rights. They wanted to make some money, so they made a sequel. They did involve Haruhiko Mikimoto to do the character designs. And it also had a lot of other cool talent involved. And originally was brought to the States in the 1992 via U.S. renditions. That's how I first saw it, via VHS tapes. Did you watch Macross 2 early on, Robert, when it first dropped?
No, I was too busy doing other stuff.
Too busy running Animego. That was like the beginning, right? When did you guys first drop Bubblegum Crisis?
1989, 1990.
Yeah, so that was like peak. Yeah, I remember my buddy showing me Bubblegum Crisis on VHS that he bought, the original clamshell VHS that you guys used to do. He had that very first episode and it blew me away. I was like, what is this? So how did you get involved with the Macross 2 license? How did this come about?
Ah, my goodness. You know, we're always talking to licensors in Japan about potential projects, and came about that after the resolution of the legal conflict between Big West and Harmony Gold, they started looking for people to release the various Macross series internationally. And so, you know, we spent a couple of years, I think, talking to them about it before we finally made a deal.
And this deal was made with Big West?
Yes.
That's awesome. Is there any, since we're talking about Big West and Macross, is there any chance that you guys, dream project would be you guys would get the Macross Do You Remember Love movie? That's never been officially in the States other than that crappy dubbed version a long time ago. Any chance that that's on the table for a future project?
No, I really can't talk about that kind of thing.
all right, fair enough. Now, this isn't your first dance with the Macross franchise. I remember this because I was one of the early backers of the December 2001 SDF Macross 1982 DVD box set that you guys put out in a 9-disc collection, which I still own, that came in a nice slip box, and it came with a lenticular cover, and each disc had 4 episodes and the highest bit rate you could do at the time, and each disc had a little bit of liner notes about those episodes and some line art. That one you had to license through Harmony Gold at the time, because that was during that confusing era where they got the rights through Tatsunoko, and Tatsunoko says they owned it, and Big West said, no, we owned it. That's either here nor there, but that was your first big Macross release. And it still looks, I was watching it this morning just to see if I remembered what it looked like, and I haven't watched it in a while. And for a 23.5-year-old release, it still looks pretty nice, even on a 4K Blu-ray player upscanned to 4K. It's a little soft on the image, but the subtitles look as good as ever.
Well, thank you.
that was a killer project. And that, for people who don't understand, what was that $260 prepaid? It was $250 for the box set, $10 for shipping or something like that. I'm trying to remember what I paid for that. at that time.
It was expensive, but
and if we cut in inflation of that, that's probably closer to $300 to $400 today.
Well, those were the good old days when you'd have to spend $40 to get an OVA on VHS tape.
That's true. This is true. Anime fans have no idea like how expensive it was during the pioneering era of the mid late 80s, early 90s. So you guys had licensed that through Harmony Gold and brought it over, and it sold for a couple years, and then they eventually gave the license to ADV, who did a dub version. I don't know if there's a current version of that on Blu-ray in the States. I don't think so. I know it was released on Japanese Blu-ray. So maybe somebody else will pick that up. So you guys got the license for Macross 2. Their Big West is possibly shopping around other Macross products because they have Macross Plus, the Macross Do You Remember Love, Macross 7, Macross Frontier, so on and so forth. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the future.
I know some of the other Macross series have gone to other licensors.
Uh-huh. I figured, because it's such a big, popular franchise, you know, thanks in big part in the United States. For a lot of us, we were introduced to it through Robotech, right? It was the first 36 episodes of the original Robotech series. That's how I first heard about it. And then later on, I saw the Macross Do You Remember Love on a beta cassette that my buddy had with no subs, no dub. I was like, what is this? This is amazing. And then when US Renditions released Macross 2, I saw that. And then I also picked up that Clash of the Bionoids dub of Macross Do You Remember Love on VHS that was heavily edited. But, you know, at least it was out there for us to watch. Mm-hmm. Do you have a particular favorite Macross show or series?
It's weird because when you're in the business, like your favorite is always the one you're currently working on. And then as soon as it's released, you think, oh my goodness, thank goodness I'll never have to watch it again.
Yeah, because you probably have to watch these a lot, checking for errors. How's the transfer look?
Yeah.
Did this encoding go right?
There's a reason why our internal Slack channel for production is called the Sausage Factory. It's because there's a lot of grunt work, and sometimes it really kind of you kind of think, oh, I just don't want to watch this again. But the kind of the flip side of that is when you are watching the show over and over and over again, and you're having to pay attention to it, you start to see lots of little details of like how the animation was done, in jokes the animators put in, cameos in the backgrounds and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
So the Budweiser cans that were in Do You Remember Love?
Yeah.
The missile pods.
Weird shit. Where it was clear that somebody was getting really a little stir crazy in the middle of the night. And that's always a lot of fun. So, it's like, you know, right now I'm really enjoying working on Macross 2. I mean, there's a lot of nice things in it. There's some beautiful animation and just lovely work. Back in the day, the original Macross TV series, that was a huge amount of fun to work on, but it was just like a massive amount of work. I mean, the restoration work that our team put into that, of literally going through it, frame by frame and mm-hmm. correcting scratches and stuff like that, at a time when doing that sort of digital correction work was not as easy as it is now. That was a labor of love, definitely.
Yeah, that was a really milestone release, I think, for animation, was that set that you guys put out. It was it showed that you could take an older show and clean it up, and people would still be interested and definitely pre-order something like that. Because a lot of us did. I was a member of Macross World at the time, and everybody was so excited to get that original box set. I haven't checked on there in a long time, but I'm sure they're excited about this Macross 2 Kickstarter, which was your highest grossing Kickstarter or highest funded Kickstarter, something insane.
Yes. Like 401, 402, something like that. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought that it might get up to the 150 range, you know, but when we do these things, I'm notoriously conservative about my expectations because I don't want to be disappointed.
And sure.
And, you know, so I look at it and say, well, you know, how much do we really think we could get? And, you know, what kind of project could we do with that money and blah, blah, blah. And this one, you know, this was one of my worst miscalculations in terms of just like lowballing it.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't surprised, but only a little surprised, only because in recent years, and we'll get into this, you know, Macross 2 is almost like a redheaded stepchild of the Macross franchise. I'm just going to read you a little note I saved here. You know, it began production in 1991 in order to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the original Super Dimensional Fortress Macross television TV series. Out of the original Macross staff, only three of them returned for Macross 2. Haruhiko Mikimoto, the character designer, Sukihiro Tomita, a scripter, and Yasunori Honda, who is the sound director. Soji Kawamori, who was sort of the father of Macross, the mecha designer and kind of the story designer, was not involved. And neither was anybody from Studio Neue. They did it as a 6-episode OVA, and then later they just put all those into a movie. Right.
Yeah, but that's just the whole stuff just smushed together. There's no real.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no you know, it's a sequel directly to the Macross Do You Remember Love movie, which now they've kind of split the timeline. So now you have like there's the 82 Macross show and then the sequels to that are +7, +0. You know, and then Macross 2 is on its own timeline as a direct sequel to Do You Remember Love, which was a movie within the original Macross universe, if I'm remembering my crazy Macross timelines correctly. So for a long time, people kind of dismissed Macross 2. I always enjoyed it. I remember, I bought the VHS tapes when it first came out, and then later I picked up the Macross 2, the movie DVD that Manga Entertainment had brought out here. So I was sort of like you. I knew it would make money, but I was kind of surprised by how big of a Kickstarter you guys got. $404,396.
Yeah.
And that also means, if I remember correctly, because I participated in this one, that we're getting a 4K disc out of this too, right?
Yeah. What we tend to do with these Kickstarters, the sort of like rule of thumb, is we want to spend about half of the money on the actual production, manufacturing, and distribution. So when you get up into this level, it's like, how the hell can we spend this much money? And so the way we ended up doing it in a way that was like fair to like everybody, not like have bonus features only for like one group, was we just said screw it, and we're not only doing a 4K disc, but we're just giving everybody both the Blu-ray and the 4K disc.
So perfect. Combo. That's great. Yeah, that was pretty cool when I saw that, because I had a couple friends and we all got one, and we talked about it. We're like, oh, that'd be great if we get to the 4K level. And then sure enough, like, was the day to couple days before it ended, we hit the 4K mark. I don't remember, but
well, there was the level at which we'd do a release and you'd be able to like upgrade to $10
to upgrade to a 4K, yeah, right? But then there was,
and then there was then the it just level. Got to the point where we said like, oh god, it got to the point where it was logistically easier for us to
just to give everyone
give everybody the damn 4K.
That's awesome.
It's like I just didn't need the headache of doing two different versions.
Sure. Well, let's talk about the story a little bit. Like I said, it's a sequel to Macross, Do You Remember Love? The SDF, it takes 80 years after the original Macross, Do You Remember Love? And the Macross ship still exists, as does the UN Spacey. And they use their Minmay attack to thwart like rogue Zentradi that are still, you know, coming by Earth and threatening it. But a new humanoid race called the Marduk arrive in our solar system, and they have enslaved Zentradi and Meltrandi warriors who are unaffected. They have their own singers called emulators who kind of noise cancel out the Minmay music, right? That's
a good way to put it.
Yeah. And the story, our main characters are Hibiki Kanzaki, who is a reporter caught in the middle of the action when he rescues one of the emulators.
Yeah, he just happens to know how to fly Valkyries because...
Oh, yeah.
No.
Because who doesn't?
Yeah, you learn that. You get that. You go to Valkyrie school in high school, apparently, you know, and take Driver's Ed. But whatever.
He teaches her about Earth culture, and then... she shares it with the rest of the Marduk. And of course, it's like the same sort of plot as the original series. She corrupts the Marduk, other guys. And then the Marduk emperor wants to destroy all the Earth, but with the help of ace pilot, Sylvie Gina, Hibiki and Ishtar, they, you know, they're able to thwart him and end the whole wars. The plot's pretty basic, but the main thing, and I think like you pointed this out earlier, the animation is gorgeous. The production was I just remember it looked amazing at the time when it came out. And even just watching, I watched some clips on YouTube today. I was like, oh yeah, it still looks really good. There's something about that 80s, late 80s up through the late 90s hand-drawn animation that just can't be beaten with digital for me yet. Like there's something about that hand-painted, handcrafted animation that still looks visually more pleasing to my eye than some of the, especially the early CG stuff that followed in the early 2000s. That stuff was bad. It's gotten a lot better now, but I don't know how you feel about
it. It's all a matter of economics, really. I mean, you could do the same quality animation it was done back then. It just would be very expensive.
Yeah. But do you think it is because they used to shoot it on film? Do you think it's because they used that kind of paint? Do you think it's all the above? Because like, I don't know if you remember the early 2000s, they started doing more and more animation on a computer, and you could just tell it was on a computer. The color wasn't as vibrant, or maybe they just had so many selections of colors that just didn't have as much contrast. There was just something different about it that, you know, just didn't hold up visually, I think, the way this stuff holds up.
Well, I think it's a matter of taste. I mean, it, you know, we all love the stuff that, you know, we were exposed to when we were young. And so somebody who's like 20 years younger might have a completely different opinion and think that, you know, the early 2000s stuff is the best stuff, and this modern, like 2020 stuff, is complete shit. So,
yeah,
and the stuff that came before that is also a complete shit. So, it's you know, what's the saying? There's no accounting for taste,
right?
So, and that's fine. I mean, you know, every generation, you know, tries to do the best with the tools that they have available. And the tools that are available today are different from the tools that were available 20 years or 40 years ago. And so the, you know, as each generation of artists tries to sort of optimize doing the best they can within their resources. And that's not just the technical resources, but the financial resources. You get different optimal sort of, you know, everything converges to different different styles and different, you know, most efficient ways of doing things. And I don't think that's necessarily bad. It's just the nature of the creative process.
Sure. Speaking of which, so how has your production line changed? You know, I think we went over a little bit of the history of what you guys did in the early days on our last episode where we talked about Megazone 2, 3, you know, when you guys used to use, you know, when you were doing the subtitles onto the VHS tapes. What is your production line now with these newer productions and we're doing, you know, a 1080p or 2K or 4K scan and the subtitles? What's your process like now?
Well, the process is most of the same. It doesn't, 2K, 4K doesn't really make any difference. We actually, you know, just for convenience, when we're doing our test subtitling, we actually scale things down to, I think, 640 by 360. It's like 1/3 HD. Because that's a convenient size where you can see the subtitles and you can see the background video. And you can also, you know, the file sizes are convenient for, like, you know, putting something up on Dropbox for people to look at. But, you know, the production process, I just use Final Cut. I've got a little bit of automation hooked into it to help with the, you know, finding the start and stop times of the subtitles. We still use the same subtitling script files that we have since the very beginning. They're a little bit more complicated now, but the general structure is the same. And quite frankly, the original files from 30 years ago, I can load into my current subtitling engine and they'll still run. But the result of running one of these subtitle script files is basically a bunch of bitmaps for all the subtitles and some data files that say, like, when a subtitle starts and stops. And then those can all get imported into Final Cut or imported into an authoring system for Blu-rays. And the result is, you know, you can watch the video with subtitles. So it's kind of like, it's more or less the same as what fan subtitlers have ended up with, except that ours has got a bunch of little tweaks and quirks that are specific to the kind of things that we like to do. So they make our lives easier, like, you know, setting subtitle colors for particular characters and stuff like that. We have like really simple and easy ways to do that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's cool. And and I know on the campaign there was initially you weren't sure if you were going to get the English dub rights, and this would be the 1992 US renditions English dub. Mm-hmm. Correct?
Yes.
So, and you guys were able to secure that, which is cool, because I always thought the English dub to that was not too bad. I mean, that was one of the early dubs that was actually pretty good. I bought those, I think, dubbed on VHS because it was $10 cheaper. And when you're a poor kid in in high school or fresh out of college, you're like, that $10 can buy me dinner, so I'm going to get the English dub version. But anyway, so you got the English dubs. Now, the subtitles, did you guys go back through the scripts and redo the subtitles to your own liking? Did you have to do a new script? Were you able to use the old subtitle script? What did the subtitle process?
All of the subtitles are brand new. We are translating them for fresh.
And, oh, cool.
Yeah, because, you know, that's a standard thing that we do is we always do the subtitles fresh. I mean, if we have access to previous subtitles that have been done, we'll occasionally refer to them to, like, you know, answer questions about nomenclature or
right.
stuff like that.
Because the context of Japanese language can vary from translator to translator. Yeah.
But like Big West has provided us with a huge amount of materials to refer to. So like they literally have spreadsheets of every name in all of their shows. So we can look up what the official name of this particular minor character is. So that helps.
That's great. That's really cool. What else went into the, what about the video restoration process? Was that on Big West's end? Did you guys have to do any video restoration for this release?
Or? We're not 100% sure right now, because literally I expect to get I've already gotten HD versions of the files, but the 4K versions are coming probably a week or two. We're going to have to do color grading and stuff like that. And we're hoping to get the original director to supervise the final color grading of the films to make sure that they meet their vision. But we do have the original 2K, HD release that we can match against. So that should be relatively straightforward. And since we're going from the original negatives, I think the amount of like restoration work will be relatively minor. It'll be things like splice removal and stuff like that, which is very straightforward stuff.
Oh, that's great. All right. Hey, well, let's take a quick break, everybody. We're talking with Robert Woodhead, founder of Animego. We're talking about the Macross 2 Kickstarter. It was very successful. It's coming on a 4K/Blu-ray near you. But let's take a quick break from Retro Futurist Culture. Take a listen to this commercial break. Check out other shows on the Ruminations Radio Network.
Oh, God, it hurts.
What's wrong, buddy?
Nothing. That's the name of our podcast.
Do you think anyone will know it's a reference to what some random SWAT team member said in that one scene in Terminator 2 after getting nailed in the back with a gas canister?
Probably not, but they will get a regular dose of two lifelong gamer buddies on either side of the Pacific Ocean, delivering their view of video games with a retro emphasis every other week.
That's cool.
Hey, everybody, it's Optimus with RFC coming back with Robert Woodhead from Animego. We're talking about Macross 2, possible other projects in the pipeline. Robert, we just finished talking about the video restoration process on Macross 2 and your whole production line and subtitling and authoring. I have on here, let's see, you guys had the Kickstarter. People can still go to animego.com/macross2 and order one of these, correct?
Actually, the easiest way is macross2.animego.com. We just have,
there we go.
We made up that automatically gets you to the right page.
Right. So then with this order, you get all six episodes of Macross 2 in both HD and 4K with Japanese audio subtitled and or the English audio. Three types of English subtitles, two Japanese commentaries. Oh, this is going to be awesome. Even one with Haruhiko Mikimoto. That's great. Clean opening and ending credit sequences, a list of all the Kickstarter backers on the disc, including Optimus. Liner notes, booklet containing interviews, folded printed insert, reversible cover slip, new original artwork, and the discs are not region locked. And then will people be able to upgrade to the, I think I bought the premium with art book mm-hmm. set myself.
Yeah. You can get, we've made every sort of permutation from like just the Amaray Blu-ray UHD combo to the full box with, the disc and the art book. The art book is just going to be immense. I'm pretty sure it's going to be over 200 pages.
Yeah, when I saw that up on offer, I was like, well, I have to buy that. I just have to. I mean, so far I've bought, I think I have every one of your recent Kickstarter releases in the premium, maybe not the highest tier version, but at least the premium versions, and they've all been fantastic. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this one. I was super excited to see that you guys got the license for this project. What else is going on at Animego in the future? Is there any other projects you guys are eyeing? Is there anything you can say about any future projects?
About future Kickstarter projects, we have a couple in the works that I can't really talk about just yet. But you may have also heard in the last week or so that Natsumi and I are sort of edging into retirement over the next few years. And so Animego is going to be moving over to be run by Justin Savakis of Media OCD fame. And so he's sort of our young apprentice, so to speak. So he's going to be continuing on the particular brand of insanity that we do into the future.
That's great. So, I mean, you guys have been doing this a long time. I mean, I don't know if people know how long you've been in this, and even before you were starting Animego, you were a programmer. You programmed the original Wizardry. I mean, you popularized the computer kind of virtual Dungeons and Dragons game before anybody, and it was copied by everybody. So, yeah, you've been at this a long time. How did you get involved with Media OCD? How'd you guys strike up a relationship?
Oh, well, we've known Justin for many years, and also he did the Blu-ray production on a couple of our Kickstarters. So we know he has good technical chops, and also he's done the Blu-ray production on a couple of our old titles that got picked up by other companies, like Urusei Yatsura. So you know he has a long history of working with Animego stuff, and when we decided that we wanted to start to sort of wind things down on a personal level, we were looking around this to say, like, you know, who do we want to pass this on to? Because just selling the company didn't seem like the right thing to do. We wanted to make sure that it was in the hands of somebody that we thought had the same sort of, like, you know, viewpoint or outlook or style, if you will. And he struck us as the person that we knew that was most sort of simpatico. I don't know if that's the right word, but I think you get the idea.
Just meshes with your philosophy, your core values. What is the process like now compared to back then, as far as you guys getting licenses and releasing them in the United States? Compared, I know, like, it was kind of the Wild West in the 80s, right? And like, there weren't that many companies doing what you guys do now. And I think the boom of this has kind of fallen, and we're almost back to that same level, because I don't see as many, and maybe that most of them got gobbled up by large companies, but you know, you don't see a lot of the off-key anime coming over here. We get all the big shows that are popular in Japan and stuff that's popular in the shonen stuff, all the big companies, Funimation and that. They take all that stuff and bring it here. There's not many companies left like you guys that are bringing, like, either the older anime or the quirkier anime or just, you know, the oddball stuff.
Well,
I think it's like you guys and Discotech and maybe one other company, you know?
Well, I mean, in terms of licensing, it's pretty much the same it's always been. You have long-term relationships with the various companies, and you know, you find out what's available, and if you like something and you can afford it, you license it. And you know, we've been through several cycles in this industry of like prices just getting insane. And then there's a big crash. And so we've always tried to sort of zag when everyone else was zigging in terms of like doing stuff that other people weren't doing, because we felt that that was a sort of a lower risk strategy. And also it tended to steer us into these kind of projects that maybe they weren't the most, you know, commercial projects, but they were the more interesting projects. And you know, weirdly enough, every time we've licensed something because we thought, oh, well, this is going to make us a ton of money. I mean, maybe we don't like it that much, but you know, it's like surefire, you know, buckets of cash. It's been a complete disaster. But on the other hand, some of the weird little stuff that we've done that we just did not having any real expectations that it would do super well have ended up being like, you know, really long-term big projects.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested to see what you guys can get next, or if it was anything coming out, something you used to have a license for.
I really can't talk about the future.
All right. Sorry.
The standard thing we say is we can neither confirm nor deny the
denial
of our licensing plan. And in any case, you shouldn't, going forward, you really shouldn't be asking me. You should be asking Justin.
You're like, get him on here. Yeah, I will have to do that.
Absolutely. You should be getting him on your show and grilling him, and he will lie to you as well.
Well, you gotta CYA. I understand. That's how business works. That's great. And then you had the last, I know it's been about a year, more than a year and a half since the Maddox Blu-ray came out. That ended up being really nice. I grabbed that again. I got the art book chip case set up with that. I had not seen that since your original, I think, VHS release in the 90s. And that was really cool to watch. And it had been a long time, but it's still that one's very quirky, fun, quirky, interesting, like just kind of off the wall a little bit.
Yeah.
We
particularly enjoyed doing that one because it allowed the director, Aramaki Shinji, to fix an animation mistake that had been bugging him for like 40 years.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, it looked fantastic. I need to actually just throw that in and watch it a couple more times. That's great.
Yeah, there's so a moving huge on, amount of background detail in that show.
Yeah, and the hand-drawn animation, too, is just mind-blowing.
Well, the my favorite story from doing that was that there's a particular image that's often used in the packaging, and it's basically the Madox with all of its various weapons, and in the background there's a helicopter. I got a email from one of the backers saying, can you tell me, is that my father's helicopter? Because that particular helicopter is a very specific subtype of the helicopter. There are only a few made, and his father was one of the pilots of them. And he dug up a photo from a newspaper of this helicopter, and it is the exact same perspective and exact same helicopter. And so nobody can remember exactly what happened, but apparently when they were doing the research for Madox, they stumbled upon this photo from this newspaper or magazine or something of this helicopter, and it ended up becoming a drawing in the show.
Wow. The fact that somebody could recognize that is crazy.
Oh, when you see the two side by side, the photo that was was printed, and the image, they're identical. They're absolutely
right
down to the like tiny details of the things that are bolted on the side of the helicopter.
That's awesome. Is there any other projects? Is there any project you can talk about coming up that everything is still in negotiation phase?
We have one project that we know we're going to do. That is something I'm pretty excited about, because it allowed us to do something that I've wanted to do for a long time. But I can't talk about it. And we got another.
Sure.
I'm sorry. It's not going to be a broken record. And we have another project that is close to being finalized. So that's basically going to keep us busy for the next couple of years. And so we're not just like, hard retiring. We're going to be kind of like sailing off into the sunset for a couple of years, doing a couple of Kickstarter projects. Meanwhile, all of the sort of like more mainstream aspects of the company, the mass market sales and stuff like that, and new licenses and possibly additional Kickstarter projects after that are all going to be done by Justin.
Do you find, is the Kickstarter model for what you guys do seem to be the most effective way to get a license and ramp up production and get the investment you need to feasibly create these products, right? Is it just too expensive to just outright buy a license and do it yourself?
Well, actually, we don't do Kickstarters to raise money for the project. We could do the project and we could release it normally. That's perfectly feasible. The reason we do the Kickstarter is because it allows us to go direct to the absolute core super fans. Okay. And that means, because we're going direct, it means we don't have to pay the Amazon tax, which means now we have a lot more money to actually do the production work, which means that we can raise the quality of the production work. So that's why we do the Kickstarter. We do the Kickstarter so we can do the extra restoration, so we can do the big art book and stuff like that. Otherwise, we would just be doing sort of the more traditional release of like, oh, here's a Blu-ray, it's suddenly available, that was happening in the past. So, that we did for most of our releases, except, of course, for the original Macross, where we sort of did a kind of like a proto-Kickstarter.
Right. It was like a special pre-order.
Yeah.
And only the pre-order people.
And all that
stuff.
And it wasn't really a pre-order. It was you pledged that you would order it if we decided to do it. We didn't collect the money in advance, but we collected promises that you would order it if we released it. And then, of course, just before we released it, it's 2001, end of 2001, so you all know what happened. And that had an impact, but it still worked out.
Yeah. Like I said, I was one of those people that pledged and ordered it and checked my tracking number every 30 seconds while I was at work for a week or two waiting for it to show up, and then marathon the whole thing in like, I don't know, 2 days.
did you ever see the photo from inside of our office when we were when we stacked up all the boxes that were ready to go out?
Yes. Yeah. I think that was posted on Macross World. And then I don't remember, there was Anime Expo in, it was either Anaheim or LA, and it was either, I think it was after the release. I think it was that following summer. So it was summer 2002. And I got to Nobuo Ishiguro, the original director of Macross, was there. And it might have been the year before. And Shin Kurokawa,
yeah,
he was the guy that did the digital, most of the digital legwork on that project.
Yeah,
he was there. Yeah, and I got to talk to him, and that was really cool. And he was telling me about some of the process you guys went through at the time for that release.
Yeah, Shin just went insane on that project.
Where do you know where he went off to? Who does he work for now? Does he work for another different anime company?
I haven't heard from him in a couple of years. So I did hear recently that he was doing fine and stuff, but I don't have any real details, to be honest.
Yeah. And then we lost Nobu Ishiguro like not too long after that. He was pretty up there in years. He was 80 plus. All right. Well, man, I'm really looking forward to this release, Robert. I think a lot of fans are. I think it's going to be really good. I'm really looking forward to see what you guys put out in the future, as always. Is there anything else we should be looking out for? Like maybe friendly other companies that you know of or projects that people should keep their ears out for?
Well, I think you're going to see a lot of the Macross back catalog come out.
Okay.
So yeah,
if
you're a Macross fan, you're going to have a good couple of years, I think.
Yeah, they have. I mean, I know in Japan they've had Macross Plus and Macross, like all of it's been on Blu-ray for years in Japan. And that was, none of it was coming over here because of that whole dispute with Harmony Gold that was finally sort of solved, I guess. And that's good for everybody. So, all right, Robert. Well, I'm not going to keep you too much longer. Thank you for coming on our show, giving us some detail on this process. And I loved the insight into why you guys do the Kickstarter. It's for the fans, not because you needed the headroom. And that was really cool to learn why you did that. I always thought it was just a way to gauge how many people really want to buy this thing. Cause anime is still not huge in the States, especially old relic anime, if you will, stuff that some people may not care about.
No, I mean, the way we set these things up is that minimum goal is like, if we get that much, we know we can break even.
Perfect.
And then, but other than that, the Kickstarters are purely, they're purely, basically a sales channel.
All right, everybody. We've been talking to Robert Woodhead, founder of Animego, talking to us about the Macross 2 Blu-ray /4K release. You can order yours now. What was that address again, Robert?
Macross2.animego.com.
If you still haven't, if you weren't able to get on the Kickstarter, you can order one right there. And what's the tentative release date for this?
We're hoping for this coming Christmas, but no battle plan survives contact with the enemy.
Right. All right. So we can look forward to that hopefully by the end of 2024. And this has been a Ruminations Radio Network production, Retrofuturist Culture. All right, guys, we're going to head out of here. Check us out on Twitter at Futurist Retro. Subscribe, rate our show on Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please check out other shows on the Ruminations Radio Network. And we'll catch you guys later. If you have any questions, drop us an email at ruminationsradio@gmail.com. If you want to support Ruminations Radio, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/ruminationsradio. All right, real quick, Robert, who's your favorite character in Macross 2?
That's difficult. Because it basically depends on whose lines I've been massaging most recently. I sort of have to say maybe Sylvie.
Sylvie, because she's an awesome pilot.
Just because she's sensible and competent. And you know, like, yeah, she's balanced, I guess is the right word to put it. I mean, she's balanced and dependable and no nonsense. And, you know, I can relate to that. She reminds me of my wife.
All right. Good answer.
After, you know, almost 40 years of marriage, yeah, I know what the right answer is.
All right, everybody. That's Robert from Animago. This is Optimus from the RFC. And we're going to fly on out of here and hope we don't run into any Zentradi. Thanks again, Robert. Have a great day.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.